Hello, everyone. Welcome to the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. The season's getting ready. We're going to be tipping off pretty soon. Media days were on Monday. We're recording this on Monday afternoon. Joining me is Michael Lee of the Washington Post, covers the Wizards every single day. Wanted to get him on the line to talk a little bit about the John Wall injury. Obviously, Wall expected to be out 8 weeks, pretty devastating blow. And Mike, let's start there. There's been talk about whether this was the result of, too much of a workout schedule in the off season without him being strong enough to deal with it because it's a stress fracture. Is this one of the things where it could have happened at any time and it was unavoidable, or did the workload from his off season workouts have something to do with the injury?
Well, first of all, it's not a stress fracture. He hasn't broken anything yet. I think that what they did was, when Dr. Olszczyk, when he went to see him, he said that it was the early stages of what could eventually become a fracture. So what the Wizards did is when they discovered that this was something that could eventually become a problem, they just shut him down so that he could heal. So I know it's been reported a lot of places that it's a fracture. There is no fracture. It's not a crack or a break or anything, but I think just the wear, John said it's the wear and tear just from his off-season schedule. But again, I just want to clarify that there's nothing broken in his leg. They caught the injury before it turned into something serious. So this is more precautionary and to make sure that John can heal because he's been complaining about feeling some discomfort in there for about a month.
Well, that's good news to hear. I obviously, read otherwise that it was a stress fracture. It's good to hear that it was more precautionary. We saw some of the same kind of stuff on Media Day with Andrew Bynum being, he had some soreness, so the Sixers are shutting him down. Eric Gordon is being held out for a lot of training camp as a precaution by the Hornets because of some soreness in his right knee. So we're seeing some of those precautionary measures being taken. I know you've written about it on the Washington Post. Like, there's not a whole lot for the Wizards to be able to do with this current roster. Are they going to make any sort of move to try and address those kind of concerns? I know they made one move today.
Well, they signed Gennaro Pargo to, it'll kind of just be a veteran guy, kind of a stopgap measure to, help them through the first, 10 or so games of the regular season that John's going to miss. I don't think they felt the need to really make a huge roster move because they still don't know what they have in terms of, Bradley Beal and his potential. They don't have the name right now. He also has a left foot injury that he aggravated during the Olympics. So he's still out. So, their two best players are out right now. And I think if you just make a drastic move just to say, okay, well, we're going to try to do this, I don't think now is the time because you're also without, somebody else was pretty significant to your rebuilding efforts.
Yeah, let's talk about the Nene real quick. I know that he's going to be held out for I think, training camp in its entirety, but he's supposed to be ready for opening night. I'm a little skeptical given how sometimes these injuries tend to go, especially with Nene. Do you feel like he's going to be ready on opening night? You think there's a good chance he's going to be good to go?
I don't know. When he was talking about it today, he was very vague. He said that, there's no timetable and he wasn't going to put a timetable, and it didn't seem like he was really rushing himself to try to get back. He knows his body well. He's 30 years old. I mean, he's not, the youngest guy. So I think when these injuries try to come up, especially like a left plantar fasciitis, I mean, that's what he has right now. Those things just flare up at any time. You don't know when it's going to happen. The best thing you can do is just kind of rest and just hope that it gets better and heals on its own. But it may be something just kind of just nagging, at this stage in his career. I don't know if he'll be ready opening night or not. He didn't sound optimistic. He said he hopes that he's there, but it doesn't sound like that's going to be a likelihood. But the Wizards hope that that's a possibility. But, again, one of the reasons why they have Emeka Okafor is that, they have somebody in place in case he's not able to play a full season.
Yeah, it's the plantar fasciitis, that's a big concern because it's weird because it's one where it doesn't just heal. It can only really heal, from what I understand, from just being off of it. And that's obviously not possible for an NBA player. I know Tim Duncan really struggled with it the year that he had it. And that's, it's one where I know the biggest part about it, that's just really painful. Yeah. That's the biggest problem with trying to play through it. It's just extremely painful to try and play through.
Yeah, I mean, only way this can work out well for the Wizards is if the guys who are going to have opportunities now to either make plays or just to play, you know, if they really take advantage of it and get better, you know, with the opportunity. I mean, you know, with the name being down, it's going to be on a lot of their younger bigs to play well. I mean, Kevin Serafin played well the last 25 games after the JaVale McGee trade. He really came on strong in the second half, you know, showed an ability to score with both hands and put up some pretty solid offensive numbers. He just improved with rebounding, but again, that rebounding, those things kind of come with experience. You know, you can't rebound if you're not on the floor, and I think he'll get a chance. Jan Vesely, their sixth pick from 2 years ago, he'll get a chance to play. Trevor Booker, another first-round pick from, you know, 3 years ago, he's going to get a chance. This is third year. He's going to get a chance to play now. So I think that the only way this can turn to a positive is if the guys who wouldn't have played otherwise take advantage of it, they get better, and when Nene and John get back, all of a sudden, it's a much better team. I mean, that's being very optimistic. I mean, it's probably one of the few training camps or opening days where you show up and you kind of just feel like the energy's already been set.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, you know, with the fact that this team, for so many years, it seemed like the guys knew that they weren't playing for anything, that they weren't good enough. You know, they didn't really have good guys in there for character issues in order to be able to really make a step forward. You know, so you got the feeling today like they're already aware that this thing's already headed downhill. And, you know, how damaging is that for a franchise that's worked so hard to try and change that culture in that locker room?
Well, I think from talking to the guys, I mean, this is training camp. It is preseason, so they are optimistic. I mean, everyone still is saying that, you know, they can't shut it down because these guys are out. And, you know, they still have a lot to play for. They have pride. And, you know, but it's kind of tough to already have those conversations on the first day because, you know, the first day is a day where you just step out and you're just like saying, yes, this is our year. We're going to do it. And you just, it's kind of rah, rah, rah. And there's kind of a little bit of rah, but the other two rahs aren't there with it, you know?
Yeah, it's a single rah media day. That sounds about right. About right for him. You know, I'm looking at that roster, and you know, I'm looking at a pretty rough road for them trying to be able to create any points.
Yeah, it's tough. Even last year with John Wall on the team, they were 23rd in the league in scoring. They were 28th in offensive efficiency. So this team has been built a lot around John Wall's talents. I mean, they got rebounders, you know, and got big guys who can rebound and defend. So they can get the ball out to him so he can get out on fast breaks. They got guys who can set picks for him in pick and roll situations. People don't really understand, like, this team was a team that John Wall really came to was really bad. I mean, there were so many guys getting big minutes who couldn't even set picks for him. I mean, think about that. You got one of the fastest weapons in the game. You don't have guys who can set picks. But now they have guys who can set picks. They have better shooters around them in terms of Bradley Beal, Martell Webster and Cardi Martin. So they had this team is built structured so much to complement John Wall's talents, and now you take him out, and you really don't have a lot of scoring options, you know, in his absence. I mean, Jordan Crawford's going to get a chance to score a lot, which is probably not something he's going to complain about. But I think overall, when you look at this team, it really is John Wall's team, and when you have him going down, it's going to be hard to have anybody that can replicate what he does. But even with him, there was a lot of things that he needed to do to prove that he was worth these kind of investments. You know, he had to have a better jump shot. He had to take it consistently and confidently. And, you know, he also has to run a team, you know, because I realized that a lot of it had to do with personnel. But his problems also were in terms of getting guys in the right position and setting them up. He still has a ways to go in terms of developing that as a point guard. So he's got a lot of room, and I think he put so much time in this offseason to get better, to have this preseason training camp, the opportunity to really develop chemistry with guys, to have that taken away, that hurts him and the team in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's not a good situation. I don't think at all. Is maybe one of the hopeful elements of this be that, you know, Bradley Beal is probably going to get quite a bit of room for him to grow and develop. I mean, you hate to throw a guy that much into the water and say swim, but, you know, it does provide for an opportunity, especially with if Nene's going to miss some time as well. You know, Trevor Ariza is not really a score off the dribble type of guy. Obviously, Okafor is not a guy that you're going to dump the ball down to and say, go get us some points, big guy. So does this kind of, you know, Crawford's going to take a lot of shots, but does this provide an opportunity for Beal to maybe step up on his own, and that could help out Wall when he gets back with having a guy that's got some confidence already?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned it earlier with some of the other guys. Yeah, definitely for Beal. I think the one thing about Beal is that, he hasn't really, come in with a lot of hype and a lot of expectation. You know, they're kind of just easing him along as just a third pick, but there's not like this level of hype that maybe surrounded John when they brought him in. And I think that might be the best because Brad's such an even keel, kind of laid back guy. But he's also an effective player out there on the court. So I think this is an opportunity for him to step in there and kind of just ease his way in, because no one is looking at Bradley as being the savior or being the guy who can rescue them. But if he comes in and he plays well and he puts up solid numbers, I think that everyone will be pleased. You know, and if he gains confidence in his ability, if the players start looking at him as a leader in John's absence, when John comes back, all of a sudden he has somebody he can trust, and then all of a sudden he doesn't feel like the weight of the world is on his shoulders every night. So again, I didn't mention Brad, but yeah, exactly. This could be a chance for him to step in, and he's under the radar right now, but if he comes in and he blows up, I think it can work out in a really good way for them.
So who do you think is going to end up starting at point guard on opening night?
You know, right now, I mean, I still kind of see A.J. Price as more of the starter. They just signed Pargo, and he can do some things. But I think if you have Jordan Crawford starting alongside him in the backcourt, that you might need a guy like A.J. Price who can kind of just get him into their sets and let, Crawford kind of go off on his form, surges and everything. So I think that if they just kind of keep it traditional, a traditional set with Price and Crawford in the backcourt, that might be the way they start. But again, it's really tough to say because I haven't seen how it all comes together. I haven't seen any practices, and I'm not sure what Randy Whitman plans on doing. I mean, Crawford just said today that he's willing to play point if he has to. They could do some interesting things, maybe try a big backcourt with maybe Webster and Ariza the back there, and have Crawford back there and just do some totally unorthodox things just to get some offense and scoring out there on the floor, because you're going to have Okafor and possibly Booker or Seraphin, starting out if Nene's not there right away. So there's going to be just a lot of tinkering, I think, at this point, a lot of experimentation because, right now with two of their big pieces out, it's kind of hard to say we're going to do it this way and not try other things, because I think you just try to throw whatever you can against the wall and see what sticks.
And that's so much, the same stuff that we've seen out of Washington over the last 4 years. It's rough to hear that they're right back here in this situation. Did any of the veterans, did they talk about kind of taking leadership or really wanting to be like, we'll keep this thing together? Was anybody stepping up today to kind of talk about that and keep the team going forward?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, most of the guys, I mean, nobody came out and said, oh, guys, I can't believe this stinks. We're horrible right now. I mean, but Martell Webster, he said, he feels like the team is great on paper and that they can fill in. They have enough depth. Ariza felt the same thing. Mika Okafor said, he's willing to step in and take on a leadership role for the team because he's been through a lot, in his 8 years in the league. And I think that a lot of guys, that some of the new additions, they've seen just about everything, So being without their best players, they can move forward. Like a guy like Gennaro Pargo, he's been through a lot in his time. And he came in, he hasn't really spent any time with his guy. I mean, he got off the plane late last night, signed his contract this morning, showed up in a jersey with no number or name on it. He's already optimistic about what this team can be. So they have enough, guys, veteran guys who've been tested, who've been to the playoffs, and, who've seen, challenging times. But they also have good character guys, and I think that's what they're trying to rely on, is that even if, they may not have the edge and talent right now, that they have the character and that they work hard, that at least the attitude will be right. So when the times get tough, they'll know they'll be able to get through it.
Maybe the good news is that they've got two great defenders in Ariza and Okafor. And so if they can slow the game down, even if they're limited offensively, if they've got the veteran ability to at least play defense, they can grind this thing out and get themselves to just hang in a few games or within a reasonable range under 500. So when they get Nene back, when they get Wall back, they can slowly build their way up, and then, you know, they'll have 3 months of the season, 3.5 months of the season to get themselves back over 500 and make a playoff push. You know, is that really what they're going to have to do? Is they're really going to have to play slow, and they're going to have to grind out some wins with some defense?
Of course. I mean, that's how they were able to win. You know, they won 8 out of 10 and 6 in a row at the end of last season, and that was all through their defense. I mean, they really were able to shut down teams and keep the game low scoring. It wasn't always the most exciting basketball. It wasn't always the most entertaining. They got the win, but they did it by grinding and by playing defense. So I think you're going to see more of that. And they do have guys who have reputations for getting in there and defending. And I think that, you know, Randy Whitman has made that an emphasis. You know, when last week before all his injuries, and, you know, he was asked what kind of team this is going to be, you know, he expects it to be an up-tempo team that relies on his defense. And I think that, I don't think that changes with the personnel, because they don't necessarily have, you know, a whole, you know, collection of offensive weapons. You know, they're kind of limited in that department. So even when they add Nene and John Wall, I mean, when you look at the team, John Wall has a high career scoring average of 16 points a game. So this is a team that's going to have to play as a team. They're going to have to do it together, and they're going to have to do it with defense. And just without having two of their key pieces, it's going to make it more imperative they do it with D.
Definitely going to have to be the formula. That's Michael Lee of the Washington Post talking about Wizards Media Day. Mike, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, man. Thanks for having me.
Tough with this Wizards franchise. The fans have been through so much. They had so much hope, you know, when Gilbert Arenas came in and really started lighting it up, and during that Agent Zero period, and Caron Butler coming along with, you know, his tough juice, and even Brendan Haywood and Antoine Jameson. I mean, they really looked like they were going to be a great team, and they even pushed LeBron's Cavaliers a little bit early on, and, you know, it all fell apart with Arenas' knee, and then, of course, the big incident with the guns, and they've just been through a nightmare. It seems like year after year, that franchise just can't catch a break, and those fans can't catch a break. You know, what's it going to take for this Wizards team to move forward? They had all those knuckleheads last year and had all the problems with the guys that didn't know what they were doing, and JaVale McGee running the opposite way, and, you know, Nick Young and Jordan Crawford, and those guys really not taking team ball very seriously. Of course, you know, Flip Saunders was fired. There's been so much change there. They finally brought in a bunch of veterans with Nene and Emeka Okafor and Trevor Ariza to try and pull together a veteran team that knows what it's doing, that's going to take things seriously. And now, of course, Nene's out, and now you lose John Wall. It seems like every time they start to make a move in the right direction, things just fall apart for them, and you have to wonder what it's going to take to get them back on track. You know, I wanted to check in and see how the Wizards fan base is taking all this news. So I decided to check in with Mike Prada of SBNation.com, and he joins us now.
All right, join me now on the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm really happy to bring in Mike Prada of SBNation.com and BulletsForever.com. It's a terrific Wizards blog. They cover everything that you want to know about it. SB Nation just went through a huge upgrade to their new United platform. The site looks really great, and everyone's really excited over there. I advise you go check it out. Andrew Sharp's got some really great stuff off of Media Day. And, you know, Mike, I talked to Michael Lee about, you know, kind of the ins and outs of the impact and how Media Day was kind of a little bit down because of the realization with John Wall's injury of kind of what they're looking at. Is there a sense from Wizards fans, is it more of a panic, or is it more of a no surprise, it's the Wizards, this happens to us all the time, or is it more of a we're going to be fine, we just got to get through this rough patch? How are Wizards fans taking it?
I'll tell you what, it's not the last one. It's definitely not everything's fine. You know, like, I would say it's a combination of the first two things you said, because you just think of the Wizards history here. This is the one franchise that has not earned, for their unfortunate, you know, for the people that are currently with the franchise, but this is the one franchise that has not earned the benefit of the doubt with these kinds of things. Gilbert Arenas, when he was recovering from his knee injury, he was supposed to be out, you know, a month. He even played three games, I think it was in 2009, and his knee was never the same. You know, even in Wall's rookie year, they misdiagnosed tendonitis, and he sat out a few more games than he was supposed to. for whatever reason, and it's so hard to pin down, like, at the term, like, the Wizards medical staff is this unfair catch-all conglomerate that doesn't really exist that gets the blame for all of these kind of nagging injuries that become bigger deals. But when you see, there's a pattern here, you know, and it comes down, I mean, even something like, you know, Nene's foot is still an issue, and that was an issue last year, and it's still an issue now. And you mean he's not playing in training camp. You know, Trevor Booker missed a bunch of time last year with a foot injury that was initially said was not to be serious, you know. So there's a little bit of, like, people are worried that 8 weeks is really going to turn into more than 8 weeks. And people are, and there's also some self-loathing going on where it's like, well, this kind of stuff always happens to this franchise. So that's probably what, how I would characterize the mood of the fan base right now.
Yeah, the subsequent days that have occurred, and I talked to Mike on Monday, and it's Wednesday night now. Has there been any sort of indication about who's going to end up getting that starting gig?
I don't think. I think it's still really up in the air. I was at camp today, this being Wednesday, and I know Randy Whitman said to us that he's not really ready to commit to the starting lineup right now. I think it's probably going to be some combination of A.J. Price, newcomer Gennaro Pargo, and Shelvin Mack, I think, was kind of counted out after summer league, but Whitman said today that he's had some good practices. The other guy to keep in mind is there's a possibility that they move Jordan Crawford into more of a combo point guard role and have him and Bradley Beal play together. They tried that last year. It didn't really work. But immediately, Crawford said that he's gotten some indications that that might be what they do with him. And this is a big year for Crawford, a really big year for him to stick in the league. I know Whitman first said he's had three great practices and is more showing more maturity than he's ever seen from him. That's one possible option. Now, that would be a bit of an interesting offense with Crawford and Beal in the backcourt, but Beal does have some playmaking ability, so they could have, they could do some sort of little combo guard, mini Gilbert Arenas, Larry Hughes kind of thing if they were, it's, you know, both players kind of play above their means. So that's another possibility to look out for. I don't think anything is settled yet, especially not on day two of training camp, though.
Yeah, Michael, you mentioned a little bit about Crawford. I'm very skeptical just from the perspective. I guess I'm maybe tinged from watching too much O.J. Mayo trying to run point and seeing how that works with a guy that loves to shoot trying to run that. But maybe Crawford's handled a little bit better because that was always Mayo's real issue, is his handle wasn't really strong enough to be able to negotiate that. You know, I guess, how do you feel like the offense shifts? Because obviously that was a big problem last year. They've got some good effort guys on the team, you know, and the offense is really what struggled, and they really brought in a bunch of defensive guys in terms of Trevor Ariza and Emeka Okafor, and now with Nene probably out, you know, at least for training camp, and, you know, that fasciitis, as I talked about with Michael Lee, it's just a really painful injury, you know, and it tends to nag. So with their best two offensive players out, you know, I mean, realistically, does Bradley Beal have to come out and just absolutely set stuff on fire? I mean, in order for them to be good, is it going to have to be one of those where, like, he's going to have to go Kyrie Irving only at the shooting guard position and just light things on fire?
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? I don't know. That might be the case. I think what they're going to try to do, and this is why I wrote right after the injury, that the fact that Nene is also hurt is like a double killer, because if Nene was fully healthy, you know, what the Wizards would have done, I think, would have just been to run everything through him. I posted a stat over the weekend, but in the 11 games that Nene and Wall played together last year, Wall's usage rate was way down from what it was when he was, you know, for the rest of the year. So they're already running a lot of stuff through Nene, and they would have just kind of probably bumped it up a little bit, you know, run more low post plays, run him off in the high post a little bit more. But if Nene's hurt, that makes it really tough. I do think, though, that the Wizards are going to run a lot more high post action, a lot of, you know, throwing the ball to the big man at the elbow and running cutters off him. Randy Woodman talked about the need for his bigs to hit the 15-foot jumper. You look at that roster, you've got a bunch of bigs that aren't so great at hitting the 15-foot jumper, so it might have been a message he was trying to send to them, but the other advantage, I think, to working a lot of stuff through the big man at the high post is I think it masks the lack of a stretch four, you know, where you can kind of just put the big in the high post and kind of run a couple slice cuts, you know, to get your small forward open, to get your shooting guard open. You can have your point guard kind of not really act like a point guard. You kind of see some playmaking through the big man. I don't know if they have the personnel, but I think that's probably the best way they can compensate for not having John Wall in the lineup. And it's unfortunate that Renee is also hurt, because that's a really ideal role for him, I think. And I don't think it's quite as ideal for some of the other big men on this roster.
You and I tend to value the same kind of things in terms of efficiency. Does it concern you, the idea that Trevor Ariza may end up trying to take more of the offensive load than maybe he is best equipped to, considering his relative efficiency?
Yeah, that is a bit of a concern. The good news is that I think he really dialed that back a lot last year. I don't know if it really showed up in his statistics, but I think he did dial it back, and I think he made himself a little bit more useful in his second year with the Hornets, while it was until he got, I guess, kind of injured and thrown out of the mix. But, you know, there is, I guess, some risk of a reversion back to the Ariza we saw with the Rockets, that was handed a bigger role and just had no idea how to handle it. And he said immediately, I need to work on my ball handling. And so that's maybe a little bit of an indicator that he could revert. So, yeah, it's a bit of a concern. And the absence of Wall, I think, just does make that a lot easier to do. You know, my hope is that at the very least, maybe they, instead of having Ariza do a lot of ball handling, you know, like I said earlier, maybe they run him off some slice cuts along the baseline with the big man in the high post, where he can at least get the ball closer to the basket. But no, it's a concern. You know, I agree. And hopefully Ariza learns that, even though, understands that, you know, even with some of these big guns out, what made him a little bit better last year was that he did dial back a lot of the shot creation stuff, and it made him, I think, a more valuable player, and I think it will make him an even more valuable player if he starts hitting more shots, because he is a very good defensive player, and he's very good in transition.
Yeah, I think putting him in a position to get easy looks, that's a good formula, because there are guys that, and it kind of gets lost in this league, where there are guys that can create easy looks for themselves, and then there are guys that can create easy looks for themselves but can't finish. Ariza's always been more of the, he tends to create, make things harder for himself than he necessarily needs to, and he tries to do a little bit too much and you know, think too much of too highly of himself and some of that stuff. It's kind of interesting. The more we talk, the more I'm looking at him like, you know, when the Nate gets back, I'm like, okay, you know, power forward who has some defensive issues, older guy, not a whole lot of super athleticism, but has a little bit of burst, can score really well, a defensive center who might be able to work out of the high post a little bit, just in terms of being, you know, kind of in the pinch post, because I think Okafor can work in that capacity a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, quality point guard. I'm like, you know, they're athletic small forward. They're kind of got a Grizzlies kind of look going on when you look at
It's funny you say that, because I totally agree, and I think that is kind of what they're going for. I thought about that last year a little bit too, after they made the trade and seeing how they played. I mean, you have to admit this, the way the Grizzlies play is not how I think a lot of where the NBA is going right now. I think they're kind of a throwback team in that regard, with the way that they play so free throw line and in. They have two bigs that play in the high and low post. You know, they don't have a ton of 3-point shooting that stands out to you. They don't have that stretch four. And nevertheless, I think they're able to be somewhat effective mitigating some of those weaknesses, although I don't think the Nets were that great offensively last year. But I agree. I think it's what the kind of team they're trying to build. The only problem is they don't have Marc Gasol. And Marc Gasol is so skilled and so great defensively that it just makes what the Grizzlies do work. And, you know, Nene is good in his own way, but he's not Marc Gasol. And I don't think that anybody – I mean, I think the Wizards' hope is that someone like Kevin Serafin develops into – maybe not Zach Randolph, but that kind of player that can bang bodies in the low post and throw his weight around. But, you know, that's a great comparison. I really agree with that. I think that's kind of what they're going for.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, the Grizzlies, I always focus on more of their ability to, I always call it creating havoc, because they're able to gamble and recover so well that they're one of the teams that you can really look at and say, you know, they take a lot of gambles. They play aggressive defense that gets them into foul trouble, and they play in the passing lanes a lot, but they're also able to recover and play positional defense. But, you know, in terms of, instead of creating havoc, they always talk about, you know, grind, about really wanting to grind it down. And you're right, they're not a great offensive team, but they're able to grind out those wins. And I was talking to Michael Lee, and I was talking about how, you know, that's really what I think, if the team's going to be able to survive the stretch without Wall, that's what they're going to have to do, is they're going to have to play in those games where, I mean, they want to get those score in the 80s, because if they've got, you know, if they've got the size advantage, if they can really make life miserable for you, then that gives them a better shot for their offense to be able to create just enough for them to get you know, kind of over the hump with a little bit of development. My question for you is, you know, are those young guys, are Jan Vesely and Kevin Serafin and Trevor Booker and you know, even Crawford to a certain degree, are these young guys, are they ready to make that kind of step and play, and can Whitman coach them to a level to where they can play good enough defense to give their offense a fighting chance?
I think that's the hope. Whether it happens, I guess, is remains to be seen. What I will say is that last year after the trade, they were a pretty good defensive team. You know, some of that was Nene, but some of that is a lot of the stuff that you talked about. There was a little bit more accountability, a little bit more simplicity. I think that under Flip Saunders, he's kind of one of those guys, he's a brilliant kind of mind, but sometimes he's too brilliant for his own players, if that makes any sense. He's kind of throwing a lot at them, and they're not quite able to process it. And rather than, I guess, do a lot, one thing and do it really well, you have them kind of with too many thoughts in their brain and kind of not really doing any of them well. You see that, I guess, they can all walk through life. You see people that kind of, when they're overloaded with information, they don't, the single detail kind of loses track of what, they lose track of what that, those details. I think Whitman is trying to go the opposite approach where, look, what we're doing is not that complicated. And I think that's going to show in their half court set. But, we are going to play hard. We're going to give a lot of effort with that. And so I agree. I think that's their best chance. You know, whether they have enough rebounding is, I guess, an open question. I think that's why they got Okafor. Because neither Nene or Serafin are great rebounders, at least in terms of grabbing the board. They're kind of space eaters. So we'll see if they have enough rebounding for that. And, you know, they are really going to struggle offensively. But I think that is their best shot. Now, whether it happens, I think, depends on, you know, who they're able to play, whether they're able to get away with less offense. You know, because if you look at, they could put a lineup out on the floor that just beats the crap out of you. But if you're literally playing three self-checks, you know, or whatever, you can't play that lineup. And so I think that's going to be a bit of a concern, especially with their big guys. But if they're able to get away with it, I think that, yeah, that they can grind out games, even with some of the young guys they have. I mean, Trevor Booker is a grinder. Kevin Serafin is a space eater. And Jan Vesely, he's got to learn how to stop fouling. But if he can learn how to do that, he could be a defensive force. You know, it's just a matter of simplifying the concepts and trying to make sure they can get away with not having shooters on the floor and not being completely easy to guard offensively.
My last question for you, give me one word for your reaction to when you heard that John Wall went down. And I know that you actually tweeted something and was tweeting out the podcast. But your other word, what would you say?
So I'm not allowed to say damn it. That's what I tweeted, I think. Yeah. It was, you know, the reason, damn it, crap, worst expletives. you know, that's probably
what we should go with.
Yeah. Probably stuff like that. It's just like, you know, there was a lot of hope for him that he could really break out this year, and now it's like a big open question. So, yeah, choose your expletives, I guess.
All right, that's Mike Prada from BulletsForever.com and SB Nation dealing with John Wall's injury that's going to be keeping him out for eight weeks, I guess seven now at the end of the week. Mike, thanks so much for your time, and hang in there, man.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for your praise for all the new changes that we've made to SB Nation.
Yeah, anytime. All right. That'll wrap it up with the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody. Make sure you like us on Facebook. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at IonBasketball. I'm sure that you can find us on StumbleUpon and Reddit and Friendster and MySpace and other formulas as well as social media continues to evolve. Make sure you follow us in as many ways as possible because we really appreciate your continuing presence and making this the best blog that we can. Until next time, we'll check you guys out. This is Matt Moore for the CBSSports.com Ion Basketball Podcast.